afternoon and good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a special Wednesday night edition of NDB Media Tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you, it's fun. We're going back. We're crossing the rift. Dare I say, we're going to visit one of our friends, or our friends here on NDB Media. Of course, I'm your host, Roger Noriega, and I just can't wait. I'm just fumbling the words. Star Trek Excelsior. James is going to have to remind me when they made that change, because everyone knows, who's been with the program for a while, it used to be Starship Excelsior, and I guess he'll let us know. But I do want to welcome my guest, obviously, the man of the hour himself. James, why don't you introduce yourself, please?
Hi, everyone. I'm James Haney. I'm the executive producer and writer guy something of Star Trek Excelsior from www.starshipexcelsior.com. We make some Star Trek themed radio for you every 2 months, but that's a lie. We actually make an episode like every 6 months these days because I'm terrible. And I don't think we ever really changed the name. We just call it Starship Excelsior around you sometimes, Roger, in order to confuse you, which I would imagine we've succeeded at quite effectively.
Yes.
With me tonight, we have Mike Hennessy, our co-producer, and Michael Liebman, who plays on the show, one of the stars, Alex Rawl, and I'll let them introduce themselves. Mike?
Yes, I am Mike Hennessy, and I'm listed officially on the credits as co-producer, which, as the old joke goes, covers a multitude of sins. I'm the narrator of the show. You might recognize my voice from that. I've also played various roles here and there, and of course, James is a lover of inside jokes, and one of the characters on the show is Nurse Hennessy. And, of course, that's played by yours truly. So I have a hand in the editing. I have a person who acts as a sounding board at times, and at times when necessary, acts as the public face of the show. So I have a lot of different things I do, thanks to James's willingness to let me kind of roam free at times. And I thoroughly enjoy my role with Excelsior, and I'm looking forward to another great season. And, of course, one of the people who's going to make that happen is Michael Liebman. So, Michael, why don't you tell us about yourself?
My name is Michael Liebman. I've been playing Alex Bavoni Rawl since before in the beginning. I do it for the fun of it. I still call it Starship Excelsior for everybody.
Thank you.
I keep telling people, I just keep putting out the word when I can. As a matter of fact, the latest episode will be heading to Swaziland next week.
Fantastic.
And I just do what I'm told, or what I'm asked to do, even if it's to pull out the plastic hammer and beat James with it a couple of 100,000 times while it makes funny noises.
Yeah. And he does it well, let me tell you. He's always the first one to have his lines in, and he always leaves the biggest bruises on me when he beats me.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, if he's still on staff, James, we all know you must like it, so that's fair enough.
Well,
you know,
it's the only way I ever get scripts done.
Wow.
Last script took 6 months to write, and that was only finished because Liebman came after me.
Wow.
Yes, well,
but...
I did threaten to go ninja on him at one point, I think.
Oh, you did?
I think I did, maybe twice, as a matter of fact. I don't know. And there's, of course, that's its own joke in its own self. Maybe we'll explain why that's why that. Actually, in a way, it's not even a joke. But anyway, we won't get into that one. That's more of the personal affair. But the idea that we have a lot of work to do and a lot of people willing to do it is really part of what makes Excelsior kind of unique.
Yeah, no doubt about that. But wait a minute, you don't want to cross a line? I thought we did. You're talking about a plastic hammer and beating the leader of this program. I mean, how, you know, what else is there?
And we're only 3 minutes in, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. I do want to welcome our guests in the chat room. Of course, we do have, if you have any questions at any time, just fire them off. And when James wants, because I always defer to James because he's going to be the world conqueror one of these days, I always defer to James whenever he wants calls from the outside world or the real world. You know what to do. 914-338-0314. And for those of you that are in the chat room, look up to the top where it has our phone number. You see that little S. That's a Skype button. You can also join in on Skype for free. I mean, you have to have an internet, a mic. You have
Worldcon?
Yeah, you have no idea as to how many people have called in and they didn't have a mic.
On the subject of people calling in, we have one more who finally became available just now. Jim Smigata, who is one of the audio engineers on the show and is going to be directing the first episode of season four, is just popping in a minute late, and I'm going to add him to our little group here.
All right.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
I hope he picks up the phone this time.
Oh, okay. So yeah. We're...
No, he told me he's ready. I don't trust Skype.
Skype?
Yeah, Skype.
Yeah, and must we give it away as to what we're relying on for this interview?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, advanced radio technology. I'm just going to keep adding him until he successfully answers, so let's go on with this whole interview shindig.
We actually need to have Uhura here so she can handle the communications, but oh well. You know, we don't have anyone right now. But, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you that have been following, you've been hearing the conversation about Starship Excelsior and Star Trek Excelsior. I remember when it was always Starship Excelsior. But James says that he tries to confuse me. Yeah, being the resident canonista, yes, James, I have never, ever let that go.
You shouldn't.
And I'm not. James is the one that referred to me as a canonista, and man, that thing is on my mantelpiece, baby. It is there. James knows that I think the word anal and canonista and Roger, I think they're just interchangeable. They all fit, right?
Well, I don't think I should be calling anyone a canonista after the season we just did on Excelsior. We pulled in the entire past 20-year history of Star Trek with the Borg. We reintroduced the bluegill villains from the first season of Next Generation that had taken the alien parasites that took over Starfleet. We tried to explain why the Borg have only sent one Borg cube a few times, and we got a really great story arc out of doing that. So when I criticize you for being obsessed with canon, I speak with love. It's from the heart.
Oh,
as a fellow canonista.
Of course, yeah. We definitely have that in common. And, of course, I've got to believe that Mike and Michael know what we're talking about when it comes to the canon. I mean, we're just, you know, hey, the rules are there. We follow the rules. And if someone goes around them, it's a heresy, right? It just shouldn't be done.
We can always take a cue from William Shatner. And if we get too aggravated, we'll just say, get a life!
Yeah. If we were not christened with middle names, that probably would be our middle names. But you have him, James. Why don't you introduce him? I am looking at an absolutely awesome profile pic.
Yes. The crazy-looking man with the crazy hair is James Magata. He is, as I mentioned before, one of our audio engineers, one of our best, and he is also going to be directing the first episode of Season 4. Jim, if your microphone is working, why don't you say hi to the group?
Ah. Oh, boy.
That actually fits the image. Think about it.
Turn off the mute button.
Maybe it's because I called him crazy looking.
Oh.
Well, I agreed with it.
Oh, dear.
Uh-oh.
he'll get here eventually.
When he does, it'll be great. He's typing now, so we'll talk this out figure out what the technical issue is. He really is a great audio engineer. It's definitely Skype's fault.
It definitely is. But,
always Skype's fault.
For those that know, the website, of course, is Starship Excelsior, and I know we're going to be referring to it from time to time. And I want to get into it and have you and your crew talk about it. This is one of the most ambitious episodes you've ever done in length and story. This is big. As I mentioned to these gentlemen just before we went live, I haven't heard the final 15 minutes. And, of course, they told me what happened right now. And
well, I told them everyone died. This isn't true.
Yeah. Well, I kidded him about not needing his hankies or his box of Kleenex. if you go through the final 15 minutes and you don't at least get a lump in the throat somewhere, then...
You're probably not.
Probably
no, you're Vulcan.
Probably a Cylon.
Yeah.
No, wait, wrong canon.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, if you see the stuff on YouTube, they're always competing against each other. But let's see, is Jim on with us right now?
Jim is trying to get his microphone working.
Okay.
He said it was working a minute ago. He'll be he's hearing everything. He's just not processing the audio back yet.
Well, good, since he can't defend himself.
no, everyone say bad things about Jim.
What I wanted to do was just say that Jim sets an amazing standard as a post producer, not only in terms of quality, but he can churn and burn like a drag racer going 250 miles an hour over a quarter mile. I've never seen anything quite like it. He really is terrific.
There he is.
Both those.
Hey, hello.
Yeah,
it's James Magata.
Yeah. So.
Well done, Jim. I have to ask, why the silent S in your name? Is that just to mess with the Canonistas or what?
The silent S in Magata?
Yeah. Magata. No. Oh, it's Smagata? I'm sorry.
Smagata, yes.
Oh, okay.
It used to be Polish, but now it's something else. I don't remember.
You don't remember.
My grandfather used to be from Poland, but then I found out he's from somewhere else.
All
in
right.
Europe.
Well,
a big town. I don't remember what it was. But anyway, hi, guys.
Yeah.
Jim is the only guy on the staff who would pose for a picture holding onto a Van de Graaff generator.
And so the cheap shots begin. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. I got to tell you, it's going to be fun tonight. And we ask you to bear with us. This is like just a bit of a reunion ourselves. I think the last time we did do this was well over a year ago. But as I mentioned prior to the program, James does join us from time to time. I appreciate his commentary and his insight on lots of different stuff. And it's just a matter of catching James at the right time. As a matter of fact, I don't think he's forgiven me when he was in on one of our debates. We were reviewing the Republican and, the presidential debates, and there was a guest on, and I forgot to tell James who it was, and he's one of your favorite authors, right?
Oh,
it was Michael Jan Friedman.
Yeah, it was rough. That was rough.
Yeah. And
I did not realize that.
But it was
but no, the real... The real debate, the toughest debate I was ever in on this channel, was over whether Star Trek IV makes any sense as a movie. And I said it didn't, and somebody else said it did. And we got into a fight about whether whales had souls. And I would much rather have a presidential debate than a debate about Star Trek IV.
And let me tell you, James, you excelled at that. It was great. He was on, I think, for at least two of them, right? It was good stuff.
Yeah, you shouldn't make my ego any bigger. Let's actually make Jim's ego bigger.
We're on our way there right now. Jim, the sound. Listening to this episode right now as a fan myself, because I am, guys, when you guys accept the invites to be on here, it's also because I'm a fan. I love what you guys are doing. Obviously, we have a radio program as well here that's being listened to worldwide. We know that. You know, people send us messages from Germany, from South Africa, from all around the world, and it's really cool. And listening to, you should be. 22,000, baby, that's our average number for the month, not per episode. Man, if it were per episode, wow. Yeah, we'd be able to send you guys some Christmas presents from time to time, but we'll get to that later. Or no, what are they, James? They're, when you have a guest on, you send them a what is
honorarium.
It?
Honorarium.
Yeah, you give them a gift, something like that. So, you know, who knows? We'll see. But, Jim, as a fan, this is good stuff, especially in this last episode. The music, the different voices, because I as a
hold
fan...
Hold on. I'm getting some feedback.
Is that from me?
No, I don't know where it's from. It's somebody's mic.
Oh, that's good. Somebody's mic? Mike? Which one?
I'll tell you what, I'm going to plug in some headphones here. So
okay. That's a good idea.
That might be it.
I knew there was a reason to get a new headset.
Oh, it's okay, Michael. It's all good. Jim, tell us about what you do, because, like I said, as a fan, I could just go on and on. But what you guys have done this last time around is impressive. You guys mixed in the music, the sound, the voice acting. Because as James has told us in the past, we know your crew is around the United States. Do you have some outside of the United States, James?
Oh, most likely. I think so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, Jim, tell us about it, man. Tell us what you do how you go about it.
I can't take much credit for the music because James is the mastermind behind all of that. But putting it all together in a cohesive form takes a lot of concentration and imagination to make sure that it sounds right. To have four different engineers on one show, or five, and make them all blend together cohesively is quite the feat. I think we do that quite well. You can't go from one scene to the next and say, "Oh, Mike mixed that one. I know that for sure." Or there's no discrepancies between the two. We all kind of blend together. And Gary Kobum is also responsible for that too, to help us keep in track.
Before I go on over to Michael, Jim, I want to know what brought you over to Star Trek Excelsior. You see, now I'm messing it up, James. I know it's Star Trek Excelsior. Tell us, Jim, how did you get involved? Because I understand you've been just about
from
the beginning, right?
You can use either name. It doesn't make a difference.
Thank you, but the Canonist in me is... This is the only time I act like Sheldon. I have to get it right.
Sometimes I call it Star Trek Excelsior. Sometimes I call it Starship Excelsior. It's all good.
It's Excelsior.
Oh. There it is.
Yeah. But, well, what happened was when I drove to work many years ago, I used to drive an hour a day one way and then an hour back. So I had to do something besides listen to radio and commercials. So I got into old-time radio. And while I was searching for something else to listen to, I came across James's site. And one of the things on his – they just had done the first episode. And they said they're looking for people to help out. And I said, oh, what the heck? I've got a little bit of experience. I might be able to have fun doing this. And that was, what, 2007 when we did our first episode?
I'm so old.
Oh, cut it out. Cut it out, James.
The Valandrian Expedition was the first one we did. And Gary gave me the first battle scene in the whole show to make sure I cut the mustard. And I guess
did.
I did. And he's been giving me battle scenes ever since, trying to get as many explosions into a two-minute scene as I could.
Yeah, Jim has done very nearly every battle scene there's ever been in Excelsior, and he's done an incredible job with those over the years.
Thank you.
The only reason he didn't end up doing all the battle scenes in Episode 309, The Grace Valen, the last one, was probably because there were too many of them, and he would have just dropped dead of having to do too much work.
And I wanted to say why that was, because I was going through a very difficult time personally and professionally over the last year at the same time we were trying to get a Grace Valen made, and I was able to do some of the basic layouts of the scenes that were assigned to me. In some cases, I was able to assemble all the dialogue. In other cases, I was able to do a few other things here and there, and I even did like one or two scenes that were almost complete, almost. But at some point, I realized that something was going to have to give, and I just simply wasn't going to have time to deal with this. And it was just one of these things where Jim was kind of like Atlas holding up the world here. We just kept throwing more and more on him because I could do less and less. And thank goodness. I mean, my fingerprints are on a few of those scenes, but really the work that is, you know, so admirable, so much of it belongs to Jim. And I mean, really, without his work, it just wouldn't have been possible.
Thank you very much. I think that out of, 65 or 70 scenes I did, just one episode or two episodes over half of the whole show by the time it was all said and done.
Yeah,
that was fun.
Absolutely.
It was fun.
Now, we are talking about an ambitious episode, and I was talking about going to Michael, but James, I want to go back to you.
Michael.
I know. This is the second time I actually go around him. But, James, tell us about the episode. We're talking about this. The running time is 148. This is an ambitious episode. If I'm not mistaken, this is
228.
Okay, it's 228. Wow. Okay, well, there you go. Thank you for that. Tell us. Tell us about it, James, about the episode, and give us a setup on it so we can continue on the program.
You know, you're actually both right about the runtime. It's 148 minutes, or it's 2 hours and 28 minutes, depending on which cut you do. Yeah, it's an amazing episode. I've lost all my words. Hold on.
Sorry.
Yes, we sat down to start doing this episode. We had already done the previous 8 episodes of the season. We'd been doing this season 3 for like 2 years. We had this incredible story set up with the Sword of Damocles, this disastrous war that's hanging over the head of the entire Federation and indeed the entire galaxy. And the Excelsior has accidentally set it off as the episode begins and has only one chance to save the entire galaxy, and that's to kill everything in the star system, essentially. And it's up against several hundred ships, and I knew this was a very, very big story as I'm writing it. I had been thinking about writing it essentially since the whole series began. It had all been building up to this. And there were all these different plot threads going. There's this Excelsior battle going on in space. There's this. We have to wrap up the storyline between Isaac Brahms and Alex Rall on the planet. We had to rescue various people from the planet. There's just all these different gears in motion. And as the episode got longer and longer and longer, I started to think, well, maybe we should split this thing. We've done that before. Mike has often been the guy who says to me, this episode is too long. You need to step back and do it in two episodes. But as it developed, we found there's just not a place where you can break it. It's one long action scene. It's a two-hour-long action sequence, and I think it works really well. I think you'll laugh. I think you'll cry. I think you will sit on the edge of your seat for quite a bit of it, and I think there'll be a few moments where you just shout, yes, because there are a lot of those beats. And if we'd split it up, it wouldn't have worked that well. It wouldn't have worked that way. There would have been not enough build-up, and then the denouement would have been weird.
Yeah, to me it would have been kind of a cop-out to do that, because we've been promising all along that we would do one big grand finale. And as we said, we've done that before, but really, I mean, it's one of those things where the episodes where we've done that, it's really, it hasn't been a problem. And here, this really, one of the things that we do with a lot of our shows is make a statement of some kind. And basically, I think that there wasn't any other statement to make with The Graceful End other than to say, this is it, baby. This is the big Megilla.
Wow.
You wanted a big finish? Well, here's your big finish right here. And
we're always trying to do things that have not been done before. We did the musical episode. We've done the clip show episode. And then this episode was, let's make a 2.5 hour long episode that wraps up all the plot lines. And it was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. And I think it just breezes right by. You don't even notice it, and all of a sudden, bang, it's over.
Yeah, which does not give due credit to the people who then had to implement my 2-hour and 28-minute script. The post producers have already talked. They had 60 scenes, whereas a normal episode is 8 to 12 scenes. And then the actors, which will bring us around back to Michael, had even the small starring actors had as many lines as they have had when they starred in as like the forward most important character in other episodes. All of them had that many lines this time out. It was just an incredible amount of work, I imagine, for everyone, including Mr. Liebman.
Hey, James, when did the episode debut? When in July did it?
July 12th, I think.
Okay, so we've had a little bit of time, so we can mention the spoilers, right? Is that all?
Yeah, I'm comfortable with spoilers.
Okay, but we're not going to give it away. So I just want to know, Michael, tell us your role in the episode. We just won't give it away because I'm sure there are people that are going to be listening that will probably listen to the episode after. So we probably won't give the ending away. Go ahead, Michael. Tell us about your involvement in this.
You mean as far as what I did or my part in the storyline, you mean?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Well, as very few know, you know, I'll just sit down. I get the script. I'll just sit down, you know, get out my lines, send them in to whomever I'm supposed to send them into, and say, okay, let me know when. Because what I'll do is I'll just sit down on a Saturday or a Sunday, and just go, okay, where's my next line, and do it like that. And then with this new system that James implemented, it's like, where's the password? Where's the website? And as far as the story goes, I will not give away the big spoiler.
Good.
Because I'm not sure that that's my place to do. And by the way, Jim, before I forget, Elise is online if you want to try pulling her in.
Oh, I'd love to pull her in. Thank you.
But basically, this is the most interaction in this episode that I've had with Julian, who plays Isaac Brahms, and basically he has put himself in the position of, is he going to be able to to do his part to save the Federation and the whole bloody universe from the Borg and the Bluegills, and he's up against who is, I forget what their names are,
the Bluegills.
No, the Zero. Thank you.
Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, the Zero, and they pull out all the stoppers, including the biggest stopper of all, which I will not mention. And it's like I have to, I'm of two minds. See, I'm sort of the good guy who's gone, the bad guy who's gone, the good guy who's gone. I'm not sure where I am now. because when I first came into it,
back when
in There You Are, which is the episode before the Valandrian expedition, I thought I was this JG with a special detachment on board Excelsior, and then it turns out, going through the line and through other things, that there's more of a story that I didn't realize, or a backstory to Alex's role, and all of a sudden I'm going, I gain a conscience, I lose my conscience, I gain my conscience, there is a conscience, what's the conscience? It gets confusing from one episode to the next during season two especially, and then with season three, figuring that people have already listened to season two, I died. So we thought.
Yes.
Yes.
And then I suffer with Search for Spock syndrome, I guess.
Search for Spock syndrome. Okay, fair enough.
and then when you came back to life, we asked you to sing.
Yeah.
Or was that before he died?
No, that was 3-0-something, I think. Jim? James?
Oh, that was season two.
The season two. No, yeah. it was before. And I'm of the impression I could have done a better job at that than I did, because I go back and listen every now and then. I'm going, I'm flat. But then again, I'm my own.
Let's do it over. Now we know what we're doing.
Well, okay. Now here's the interesting thing. We did lose James real quick. Hopefully we'll get him back in a moment. But Michael, I have to ask, do you recall the words? Do you want to sing it now?
Well, the problem is that there were like 9 songs.
Oh,
some of
yeah.
There was. We do the good work with the phaser in hand and a cheerful smirk at the very beginning. When it turns out I'm battling, I think it's Jim and James as Jem'Hadar. And it goes through where I'm singing.
But you killed my sons too.
Yeah, that too. but your name isn't. But my name. But your name ain't Inigo Montoya or anything like that. and then doing a duet with. Let me see. I did a duet with Julian. Which I did one with Kennedy.
Yep.
Who. That was the most difficult of them, because of the fact that I needed the notes so I could get the dang thing to at least sing it properly. That was the only one that I had. That was the one I had the most trouble with.
Now, Michael, James, you dropped just as Michael sang his one or two lines right now. Was that deliberate? Were you having flashbacks?
I missed the singing.
You missed the singing. So,
oh, no.
Yeah, I
noticed.
I wanted
to sing along.
Well, there it is. There we go, ladies and gentlemen. We have a sing-along right now. Mike, cover your ears, dude.
No, just kumbaya.
Kumbaya. Yeah.
I don't More know. Like, we do the good work. We do the good
do the
work.
Good work
with a phaser
and a cheerful smirk.
All right, yeah. All right.
That's the line that, you know, when I sing it to at myself, I always give myself a fourth part harmony there.
That's good.
Yeah, the hardest part about that whole episode is that we were given sheet music, the notes were given to the actors, they had to sing them without any real accompaniment, and then we got all the voices back, and the mixers had to put it together with the music that 4 or 5 other people orchestrated in different methods, and then it all had to be put together. So it was quite a lot of work, but I found it. I don't know about you, Mike, but I found it a hell of a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun, but I was also at one point thinking it would be a lot of fun to get my hands around James's throat and and squeeze and watch his eyeballs pop out, because it was one of those things. In the end, it was a wonderful project, and it was just something I'm really glad we did, because I mean, who would think of doing something like that? And James thought it up and saw it through. And yes, it was, when you get down to it, it was a lot of fun. But boy, I hope everybody appreciates is that we were dealing with a wide range of talents. Kennedy is from the Cayman Islands and is a very accomplished radio personality there. You can tell from that great voice she's got is Neva, but she's also a very accomplished singer. She was a former Miss World Cayman Island contestant, and so she's a very beautiful lady as well. And so, I mean, you've got her at one end, and then we've got Julian on the other end, who quite frankly will be the first to tell you that he's not a singer, and he really just showed great courage and real artistic flair and being willing to take on that role.
We really forced him into that, because I basically said, hey, the plot is about you and Alex Rawl. You will sing. And he was like, all right, I'll do my best. And he did. Yeah.
He did, and really, at certain points, it turned out extremely well. So that.
And at other points, we did voice correction.
Yeah,
we did a lot of that.
Yeah. Yes, we did.
Let's put a graceful end to that on the line and get back to the graceful end.
Yes.
Oh, well done. That was good. So, James,
we digress. Yes.
Oh no, it was great though. It's great. We actually haven't had you guys on in a while. It has been James has been on with us at least three times now, in between Star Trek Excelsior. So it's been a little bit of time.
We have another person who's ready to come on if you're ready to have her. Elise Krawick, who played Captain Cortez prior to her.
Captain, of course, indeed,
yes, and she's been on the show before, so it's very good that she was able to pop on tonight. Let me just hit the buttony thing.
Don't
there we
hit
go.
That button.
I hit it.
Jesus, boy, don't hit that button.
Well,
you
done.
Don't know why.
Let's turn into a singing night here, everyone.
And what stuns me the most is we're on Blog Talk Radio, and we have so many souls on with us, and this is crazy.
Are you serious?
Yeah, we have the connections. Let's see, we have seven. Yeah, that's not too bad.
Madness.
But one of them is actually the call in to Blog Talk Radio, so that's an inanimate connection. That's just one that does our bidding.
I would like to introduce Elise Krawick. Who, as I mentioned, played Captain Cortez and is now playing her cousin, Skipper Sam Cox, who is about as far removed from the Captain Cortez character as I could write her. And she's
Damn
been
straight.
With the show since the beginning and is continuing to be awesome even today.
Damn straight.
Well, thank you for the accolades.
Elise, it has been a while. How you doing, young lady?
So far, so good. How about you?
I'm doing very well. And I think the last time we spoke, when we had you guys on, there were two things I brought up, and yes, I remember. Have you finally seen Star Trek 2009?
I've only seen one Star Trek movie, and I couldn't tell you which one it was.
Okay. Because I believe we did the interview either in late May, right, James, of 2009, or in June, and we were talking about the movie, and Elise was quiet. And I went and said, hey, Elise, what's the deal? Well, I haven't seen the movie yet. I said, really? You have not seen the movie? So that's why, Elise, have you now seen that Star Trek movie, the first J.J. Abrams movie?
I couldn't tell you which one was his first one or which one was his last one.
You're serious, aren't you?
I'm serious as a heart attack.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
You see, that's why
that's good.
That's why I lowered my voice and I said, you're serious, aren't you? I'm not gonna
oh, yes, I are.
Okay.
Now I'll throw you for a loop. I haven't seen them either.
Either of them?
Either of them.
Oh, my.
In the last 7 years, I've seen two movies.
Yeah.
What were they?
Well, I've seen more movies than that.
Well, actually, I think one was the first Batman with Christian Bale,
mm-hmm.
and the other one was only because my sister asked me to go because her husband wouldn't go with her. I went to see Les Miserables.
Oh. I thought that was good.
Yeah, it was long. And I was really amazed at Anne Hathaway singing as Fantine.
Excellent.
Well, I do appreciate knowing that. And last time we had Elise on, we also talked about something. Not that you guys promised to do it, but it was something that we wanted to do, and we didn't get around to doing it. And, of course, now we lost Captain Cortez, so big deal, but she's now another role. But, James, we wanted to bring Starship Excelsior on, but we wanted to bring them as their characters. Remember that?
Oh, no, I forgot about that.
Really?
That would be a lot of fun.
That's 2009. It's 2013. Yeah, I know you forgot about it.
Yeah, it's been a while. That's a whole presidential term. No.
By the way.
That's something we should do.
Yeah.
Now we have an excuse to come back.
Yes, and I think it would be great. And you have to give Jim a role as well. And
Jim
that way,
I had one.
Jim has many roles. Jim plays all the people who get shot.
I do.
Oh, so
I yell just as well as Chekhov does.
So he's the one who suffers with
better,
that syndrome.
Better, Jim. Better.
Well, thanks. I swear to God I was going to try and find a Chekhov scream that didn't have music behind it and put it in that last episode, but I could not find one.
Oh, it's a shame.
Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Well, let me
tell you.
James and I were talking very quickly on the side, and not to reveal anything, but let's just say that you mentioned Chekhov. You need him to make which sound with no music when he screams?
Yes.
Okay, that might be doable.
You know Walter, do you?
I don't know Walter.
You're working on Renegades right now, so maybe it's available.
No, but actually, and I'm here's the name drop. As you know, and James remembers him, Mark B. Lee, who is a master of ceremonies extraordinaire. He does Dragon Con. He does all these other conventions. Well, he's also associated with us with NDB Media. And quite a few of our bigger guests have been through James, and through James too, but Mark, yeah.
These are your biggest guests right here.
Oh, hell yeah, right now, sure enough. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. That's why we have you all on at once. But Mark has been able to arrange some guests on with us, and whenever I'm going to say it on air, screw the rest of the hosts on NDB Media, because it just happened 2 weeks ago. Whenever I get a big name, and I think it'll be of interest, I generally reach out to James. I say, hey, dude, I'm going solo on this one. You want in? And sure enough, what was the last one? Because you didn't recognize him during the debate.
Yeah, Michael Jan Friedman.
Michael
Good
Jan
times.
And he was busy. He wasn't able to make it. But I always reach out to James because James, through Starship Excelsior, all of you, you guys have been friends to NDB Media. I hope we've been to Starship Excelsior as well. So I always reach out to James. So long story short, so I can shut up and you guys can talk, is that Mark Lee, we've had Walter Koenig, we've had John Billings, we've had many of them on, and it's because of Mark. So you're telling me that you want him screaming without music?
I'd love that.
That's the possibility. Why? You know, Jim, talk to James.
Any actor you can get to scream without music, we'll take it. We don't have to use Wilhelm all the time.
Okay.
Now the problem is, will we have to go through the SAG-AFTRA union if we do that?
No,
because oh my God, I never want to do that again.
No,
neither do I.
No,
neither do I.
But it's not a recognizable word, is it?
It's true, but it's acting. They're really strict about that.
What if we step on his toe and that's just record what it does?
Just have a microphone handy.
Yeah, that's right.
I think that would be legal. That would work.
Well, look.
We just, in the last episode, we had our guest star, a special guest star, Ursuline Bryant, who played Captain Trila Scott back on The Next Generation in an episode. And she was wonderful. She captured my imagination as a young boy. I thought she was just the coolest. And then by the end of the episode, she was dead. And I was always really bugged about that. So we had her on for this episode, and she helped close out the Alex Rahl, General Brahms story. She was a wonderful participant. She was very enthusiastic about the show. And she gave us some really great lines. But she's also a member of the SAG AFTRA Union, which is the Actors Union. And so in order to bring her on, we had to become a union production, because otherwise she would be in violation of her union rules. And it turned out that becoming a union production meant, yes, yep, we don't have to pay our actors anything, but we have to do a lot of paperwork. I spent a month trying to figure out how to do it, and then Mike spent 3 weeks at the end of the episode. Well, he was talking about how he had all the personal stuff that kept him from doing scenes. That was part of it, but part of it was also I asked him to do all the SAG-AFTRA paperwork on the back end, and that was a lot.
I would have rather done the scenes.
that's why I had you do them.
That's funny. Now, you know,
and
James,
then all the actors had to sign contracts. It was awful. But it was worth it to have Ursuline on the show. So, if we could get Walter Koenig's scream out of it, I would have to balance that. I'd have to think about it.
Well, there there's genuinely a possibility, and who knows? Who knows? Because it just dawned on me that there might be some other opportunities. So that's as far as I'm going to go right now. I'm not going to say anything else.
Okay.
But
I would
appreciate
anything.
If Walter Koenig is a request, well, that's what I was saying. Jim, you need to send James a list.
Actually, that would be fine.
You know what? Yeah. Send him a list.
Start it up.
Because
hey, we could get him to scream on air on MDB.
Yes.
And steal the sound clip. It'd be perfect.
Yes. No, not at all. You don't have to steal the sound clip. You can just take it. Yeah. So you'd be surprised. And the performers, when they're on with us, they're so cool. They'll do just about anything. And even when Walter Koenig was on, it was great. And I was telling James, John Billingsley, he's one of our favorites. I know he'll probably do something as well. So who knows? Anyway, but we have to ask. I'm not saying they will. We do have to ask. So make up a list. You never know. But
let's
continue. Elise, tell us, you miss Captain Cortez? I mean, that was a starring role. I mean, that was like in the command seat. I mean, what did you do to piss James off to get written off?
I have no idea. I thought I was doing rather well, but, you know,
I thought so too.
All good things come to an end.
Oh, yeah.
I believe Elise is the most killed person on Star Trek, right, on Excelsior
I'm
right now.
I'm the most killed captain, but you can't keep me dead.
Wow, no doubt about that.
Yeah, because now she's back as the skipper, which isn't a starring role, but is an important
still
one.
Still a skipper.
Yeah. Oh, that
well,
was
still a captain.
Oh, absolutely. I love Sam Cox.
Well, Sam Cox is such a contrast to Captain Cortez, because Captain Cortez, if you really irritate her, she might put a Vulcan neck pinch on you. I think Captain Cox would just drop you with the right cross.
Say, oh, look, when you look, down you
bam.
Go.
Bam! Bam straight!
James.
Actually, Captain Cox and I are more alike than Cortez and I are.
Yeah,
and I still don't hear the Vulcan in my voice when I'm doing Cortez. I swear I don't.
Well, I swear to you, James, right now, she gave you a scene right there. About knocking the guy down. Oh, look! And bam, there it is.
Boom.
I might just be able to borrow it from here. Well, look, you guys know what else is going on in the program. Tell me, I'm the fan and everyone else listening. What do you guys want to talk about now as far as the episode itself, other than it? You know, James, I did not like the name, or I did not like the title to this episode, because that reminded me of, at the time, none of you laugh, but when it said Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, I got a little nervous. When I saw Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade, I got a little nervous. And when I saw the title to this one, I'm like, oh, come on.
Listened to the one-off episode with Skipper Sam Cox where that's all they talked about?
Yeah, well, I had to catch up.
Right. Yeah.
Because, yeah, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, man. And I was behind. I was tardy, I admit it. So, yes, I now know the episode. But when I saw the title, I'm like, oh, come on. So, go ahead, James. Continue, man.
I hope we didn't disappoint in the end. Yeah. The episode, we had to do the episode titled that because it had been the theme. The whole theme of the episode Sunset had been this idea of the graceful end. What does it mean, really, to be a hero? Do you have to actually succeed at what you're doing for any of what you're doing to matter? And here in this final episode, we're entering into a similar situation where the Excelsior seems to be doomed. They have a really crazy plan that can't possibly work, and they go and do it anyway because that's what you got to do. That's how you get the graceful end. And so it was a fitting title, and we had to take it. So I did. That's what I do. And it also set us up for the next season, where the first episode is going to be titled The Graceful Beginning. Parallel, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of bass-ackwards, too, but that's okay.
Also true. Also true.
But no, I like that because people were asking us on our webpage, on our Facebook page, you know, what do we do for an encore, basically, is what it comes down to. And, of course, I don't think we can top that particular story arc. So, James, stop me if I get too carried away here. But I think
go ahead. I think we can give away a lot about how season 4 is structured now.
Yeah, because season four is going to be much more episodic. There will be an overarching storyline, but it won't be like the sort of Damocles storyline where it was this huge thing that was weighing down every single episode. These episodes are going to be much more episodic. They're going to be much more standalone. And also, in several cases, they're going to be written by professional writers whom James has commissioned to write them. And I'm very excited about that because as much as we all like James's writing, it's going to be interesting to see what other talented writers make of our characters. And we saw just how interesting that can be with our other one-off episode, No One Gets Out Alive, when Chris Chan Robertson just simply knocked a script right out of the park.
And he will be returning for a script about, I believe, a well on a planet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I hope that kind of tickles the fancy because, as far as these massive story arcs, okay, we've kind of been there and done that. And I think now it's going to be, even more fun for us as a production team and as actors and producers to actually have a chance to do episodes that kind of stand up on their own. And that people can kind of just jump in on and don't have to be quite as versed on the entire backstory. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And I think the polish that we've gained as a production crew is really going to pay off here because, there's a lot of hard-earned lessons that we're going to apply to this fourth season.
Let me stop you right there real quick. I want to take a moment and remind everyone in the chat room, if you guys want to call in and speak to the illustrious crew right now of Star Trek Excelsior, the number is 914-338-0314. Of course, those in the chat room, click that little S. That's a Skype button. You can do it for free, and you can click it and call in. And
yeah, please call us. We're desperate.
Well,
otherwise, we have to listen to Roger for like 10 more minutes or 20 more minutes or however long he keeps us here.
Well, be kind, because I am thinking of extending the episode, but that's neither
here
nor
there.
Oh,
no!
And for the callers that we do have listening right now, I recognize some of the area codes, but we now know over the years that often people are not at their computers, but they call in to listen, and I know they're doing that. We have four callers right now. If you guys want in, you know what to do. And I actually recognize we have two regular callers, so it's cool. Just press 1 on your keypad. You know what to do. And we'll gladly take your call. We have 845 area code, 702. And actually, we have one in downtown Los Angeles, 213. And I think the other one is 305. I recognize that one as, I believe,
Florida.
Florida, thank you. I was going to say Georgia. There you go. That's 305.
No.
305. I think that's South Florida, isn't it?
That's Miami, Florida.
Yeah.
Okay.
Florida.
Unless they split that up.
Well, actually,
those of us in
other parts of Florida don't consider Miami. Well, never mind. we won't open that can of worms.
Yeah, no, just saying on that.
Whoever that is, push 1 and tell us where you are.
Right. Then they will do that from time to time. So just want to remind everyone on that. Guys, we are programmed to end this episode in 10 minutes, but if you want to continue, by all means, just let me know because
the fans
want to hear about you guys. I'm sorry?
I have no problem with that.
I'm also good continuing for another half hour. Eventually, my wife is going to want me. But
Well, I would hope so, James.
She can't have you.
Okay.
Oh, no.
After another half hour.
You belong to us for the next half hour.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, our James belong to us.
That was a fun episode.
Yeah, I remember that one. That one was good. But okay.
You know what's funny, Roger? If I may broaden the subject just a little bit. As a result, for instance, of my working on Excelsior, I have done, I think the total number now is up to something like 40 different audio projects of one sort or another, okay? And what I'm now beginning to find is that there's a lot of crossover with actors from Excelsior. For instance, Elise and I are in Star Trek Outpost. Lee James Sands, who plays Simon Westlake, if I remember correctly, just did an episode of Nova Babylonia where I'm a second level. I'm now the engineer of the new station Novo B. God, I can't even remember, but Thomas Barnes.
Michael, aren't you in Star Trek Equinox?
Yeah, Equinox just came out this week, and I'm Dr. David Nast. And
I'm the counselor.
Oh, my goodness.
Good deal.
I haven't listened to it yet. Then Thomas Sparn, who played Old Mole, what's his name? I can't think
Hermes.
Of it.
Pseudo, Hermes, any number of things.
Yeah, he now just did an episode of Outpost. But what I'm finding now is that, in addition, is that people have heard my work here, and I'm now working on a second Star Trek Valkyrie. I did one that was a 9-episode thing. Now I'm doing a second one, which is on a Stargazer-class vessel, and then now I'm doing Star Trek Ranger as well, which is done by the son of the guy who does Star Trek Valkyrie. So there's a beginning to get a crossover, and there's also a beginning of bleed off. People are wanting me because they've heard me here.
Not to mention that James and Michael will be in season 3 of Star Rabbit Tracks on Misfits Audio.
I'm there as Dr. Harvey Hopper Smith.
I'm playing the villain.
You are. You're a villain.
Which is an awesome break for me. Wait, villainous? I'm a girl?
No.
Oh, sorry. Oh, well.
You're a mimic. You can be anything
O-U-S.
You want.
Oh, you're a mimic.
Villainous. Yeah, I'm a mimic.
Oh, jeez.
You have a cinch laugh.
And
you had fun doing the laughs for us.
I had way too much fun doing that laugh. But you'll have to tune into Star Rabbit Tracks at Misfits Audio to hear it.
Yeah. We're gathering up all their lines for season 3 now.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, I just sent in lines.
Sorry,
that
was a shameless plug. Sorry.
Oh, no, not at all, guys. It's good. Now, we actually have another caller that just came in from the 310 area code. So that's the west side of L.A. Mm-hmm. And what's bugging me is I recognize that number, too. So caller from 310, if you want in, you know what to do. You're listening to Star Trek Excelsior and the crew's here. So I know that number. It's bugging me. I know that 310 number. I just don't recall it right now.
What do they have to do to get on? They have to, like,
press 1, button? And there it is. And they just pressed 1 right now.
Oh, so, they're on.
Yes, I'm going to go to – so you know the drill, ladies and gentlemen. There's going to be a one-second delay. So as is just like in Star Trek, hairy thoughts can go on forever. There's a one-second delay. So let us know who you are and where you hail from. Yeah, I know your west side. Caller.
The frequencies are open.
Yes, they are. Oh. Caller, go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello.
Hi. I'm actually Lindsay Werner. I'm from Topanga.
Lindsay. Hello.
Yes. I commented, I got back in the day early in time to listen, so I was excited.
Glad to hear it. Yeah,
I
didn't expect to be able to hear.
Awesome,
yeah.
Awesome. So tell us, what is Lindsay's involvement in the program?
She's a fan.
Well, I am a listener, and I also kind of managed to convince a couple other Trekkies, including one non-Trekkie, to listen, and it's actually getting her into the whole medium, so congrats on that.
Thank you.
Way
and,
to go.
Thanks.
I also have a comment to Elise about...
Yes?
You made a comment a little while ago about how Captain Cortez, you can't hear the Vulcan in your voice.
Right.
Well, I wanted to let you know that that's actually a good thing, because I have a friend who is, like, very original series-oriented, and she thinks that Spock should have a monopoly on being half-human, half-Vulcan. And I finally managed to convince her that it was acceptable for Cortez to be half-human, half-Vulcan, because Spock was more Vulcan than human, and Cortez is more human than Vulcan. So.
That's very true. Very true. But then whenever I was...
Just thought
when
I'd
I was,
let you know.
Well, thank you. I did, when I was doing my research, when it all started, I went back and read, what the audio was, they were basing everything on, and Cortez, from what I read, was supposed to be more human, and her Vulcan traits were more recessive. So Spock can have the Vulcan. I'll take the human and toss in a few grains of Vulcan when the moment calls for it.
Yes.
And it worked
Yay.
Great.
And I also... Sorry, go for it.
No, go
no,
ahead,
no,
Lindsay.
No, no.
Lindsay, go ahead.
Well, I also just wanted to say that Roll is my favorite character, so...
Oh, blush. Michael, that's you, dude. Come on, you're in.
Oh, blush. Thank you very much. I mean, it's...
Is it because of his amazing singing voice?
No.
Yeah. Yes and no. I did notice when you were flat also, so... But... No, it's probably because your voice sounds really innocent, but so you've got like the, it's like you've got the look of the really innocent person, but who's actually really duplicitous and has just so many complex things going on behind the surface.
He's just as soon kill you as shake your hand.
I like it.
Well,
yeah, it's kind
thank
of
you. I'm honored that you think that. The funny thing is that what you're hearing there is my usual voice.
Yeah, I listened to your interview. And I
that certainly should give us all pause.
It's given me pause. It has definitely given me pause. I think the word was counterintuitive. I'm saying to myself, psycho. That's
no, Michael Lieben was in the Navy at one point. It's possible he's been involved in alien encounters, various murders, secrets.
No.
That's what
almost
you would say.
Well,
say,
even if
yeah.
he was, it would be classified, so.
Yeah, but then again, it's been almost 30 years since I was in the Navy, so anything that I would know.
Classified Area 51. Just happened.
It's existence, not what goes on there.
That's true.
But basically, I saw him initially. I saw Alex as sort of the young naive guy, and then when I started getting into the and finding out that there's this evil background on him, you know, special operations, and you know, it's like what?
I kind of did that deliberately because you did sound so innocent, and Lindsay's right because you do. And I didn't want you to ruin that in any way by like trying to act in your backstory at all, because Alex Rall would never let that sneak into his acting. So I was just like, no, I won't tell him anything. And then as it came out, you had to integrate it into the character live, which I feel kind of bad about, but, you did a great job with it, and you continue to be this innocent guy with an evil edge that comes out, but you never quite feel comfortable with it, which is exactly how Rall should sound.
It's a perfect smoke and mirrors, role for you. You do it so beautifully. Every time I hear Alex, I wonder, what are you up to now?
I mean, and what's even more surprising to me is when I went, if you go to the website at starshipexcelsior.com, it has the bio for Alex, and you look at the bio for Alex and you go, what? He's 6'8" and 129 pounds?
Wow. Yeah.
If only, huh?
If only. But you know.
Hey, you don't hear those things in radio, do you?
No. But.
Yeah. That's okay, Michael. You act 6 foot.
Really?
No. He acts
really?
128 pounds.
Yeah.
I wish.
The lightness in his voice.
I'm sorry,
I also
Lindsay,
like
what
that
was
his
that?
Weakness. Sorry, I said I also like that his weakness is that he forgets to pay attention to the ground around his feet, so he trips a lot.
Yeah.
That also sort of matches.
Yeah, I need to have you suffer for that. Some you gotta just trip over. We should have another snowball fight.
No, we had a Parisi Square game in No One Gets Out Alive. That was painful.
It was. We had to act that one out live in order to really break the appropriate limbs.
Ouch.
James.
Well, then I'm glad I didn't get in on the game from the get-go.
Well, there you go. Hey,
you
James.
Might have killed you off in that episode instead of the...
Well, yeah, you never know where you're going to kill someone off. James, I'm going to put you on the spot. Since Lindsay had the nerve to call in after I was only saying it a few times, she has a great voice. You should put her, you know, I'm sorry, Lindsay, I'm already speaking for you, not as your agent or anything, but you never know. She had the nerve to call in. Come up with a line for her and have her recorded, and she can be there forever.
She should send me an audition.
There you go. Oh, no,
oh,
I didn't
I
say audition. No, she should just record the line, dude, and get on there.
Oh, no, we don't put anyone in a, give anyone a line without an audition. It would be unfair to all the people who got auditions.
And considering the what the audition process was way back in the Mesozoic era.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's harder now.
Oh,
well,
please.
No, Michael.
If we had the audition process in place today that we had 5 years ago, none of you people would have been cast. That's
and,
not true.
Well, I wouldn't be a voice actor at all. I'd still be thinking about it.
Oh, that'd
be
terrible.
Well, don't forget also, at the last minute, you switch me from one part to another, James.
What were you originally going to play? I always
you had me originally as Alcar. But
yeah,
then
you did.
But then you had Larry do it, and you said, hey, we want to go with him doing... We want to go with Larry doing Alcar. Do you mind doing something else? I said, no, I just want to be part of it.
We appreciated that.
So you guys had the exact same situation as TNG the first year with Yar and Deanna Troi? You just switched them? Wow.
Actually, that wasn't the interesting one.
There's more?
The interesting one was we originally cast Larry as General Brahms and Julian as Alcar Dovan. So we had the hero and the villain, and those were reversed. And in the end, we were both really impressed with both those performances. And but we were like Julian just sounds too evil to be Alcar, but he'd be a really good Brahms. So we eventually made him Brahms, and that eventually led to We made him Brahms, then we put Michael in the Dovan spot, and then we put Larry in Alex's spot, but then we finally reversed that, and we ended up with the cast we have today. But I always have been – the original casting was the villain, General Brahms, as Captain Dovan, and vice versa, which is sort of a theme that comes out in Season 3. Dovan having to come to terms with – or having to come to terms with the fact that in some ways he is like Brahms, even though he hates Brahms.
Okay. Sounds good. Now, let me ask you all this. This is something that we did last time around, and we've now progressed in the series a bit, and Lindsay's still with us. I'm going to ask her at the end. I assume she's heard most of the episodes, if not all. I'm going to ask her what her favorite episode is. Yes, one. Don't tell me two. You can give me an order if you want, but I want one. And for everyone else, even for Jim over there, who's always the guy that gets killed or screams, whatever, what is your rock star moment where you've been in the series and you said, wow, this is really awesome. This is something that I never thought I would be doing, and this is my role right here. What was your moment where you said, this is an awesome bit of writing or an awesome story, whatever it was? What was your favorite episode, what, and maybe we can start from all the way over at the end. Jim, not that you're at the end of the line. It's just on my screen.
I was late. I know. I'm sorry.
No, not at all. Hey, Elise, buddy. The only thing Elise has on you is that she was on here before. That's all.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, that's right. But, as I said, James, I want to remind you of it. I would love to have you guys back on as your characters. That would be awesome.
That would be a lot of fun.
Oh,
yeah,
that
would
be
very
character?
Quiet because I'm dead.
You know what? Elise, you can be two-faced and be both.
Works for me.
Just kidding. That's funny. But go ahead, Jim. What was your moment that you really thought, wow, this is really good stuff, and it hit home for you? Both as a professional as you are and as a fan. Go ahead.
I think that my favorite episode of all, and The Graceful End was really good, but I really, really enjoyed Sunset, and I enjoyed working on that one the most. I think it had a really nice story, some good characters, and it was a little bit of a off-the-beaten-path from Excelsior, but it did tie in. But that was my favorite one, I think.
Appreciate that.
And I don't know if I have a moment, but that was the whole thing, yes.
Okay, you know what? I didn't mean to cut you off on that. Sorry, Jim. Michael, well, Jim, think about it. Maybe something will, you know, just go down memory lane. Michael, tell me about it.
I don't have a favorite episode. For me, it's the ride has been wonderful, and Mike had asked me about this about 2 years ago. But I guess the quintessential moment for me was one day I was listening to part of it in my car with my nephew, who at the time was in high school, and I played him the last scene from the season two finale where I'm doing the log entry after my character gets killed ? And watching him, because he didn't believe I was doing this stuff. He didn't know anything about it, you know, he's, you know, web savvy and stuff. But he gives a listen and he goes, "That's you?" And I said, "Yeah." And I thought, well, if I can get him interested in that, you know, hey, great. But I think that was probably the best moment for me was that last log entry on season two.
Oh, wow. That's cool. That's good stuff. I know which one you're talking about, too. Mike, and then we'll go to Elise and then James. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Mike.
I don't necessarily have a favorite episode so much, but I had a favorite moment as a producer. I played so many different roles that I got different favorite moments in each of those roles. But I think really as a post-producer, one of my favorite moments was, I believe it's the opening of season two, and it's kind of a mundane scene, but one that I'm really proud of, where they're actually going through the Iconian Gateway. I produced a scene where everybody's on the bridge, and they've just had this incredible fight, life and death struggle on Valandria, where what was supposed to be a routine milk run turned into this incredibly disastrous mission, and they're all finally realizing, yeah, we made it, and they actually make it to the Iconian Gateway, and James, in his usual fashion, says, come up with some sounds to make it sound like they're accessing the gateway. And I'm going, okay. And it's like, all right. So I tried some of these things and little boops and beeps and things like that. And it's like, yeah, that's okay, but we need a couple of things more. And it's like, and
I often say that. We need more.
Yeah, I know.
Just more. I'm a terrible person.
really, that whole sequence there where they actually count down to the gateway, how it comes through and how it opens up and shoots them through, and their reaction to actually seeing the stars of home, I think is one of my favorite moments as a post producer. As a talent, I got to have a good role as Simon Westlake's father, Commodore Westlake, and I think that was a fun one because that one gave me a chance to be a little bit more emotional and to kind of stretch a little bit. The announcer, the narrator role was a difficult thing, and I think we all just finally decided that the narrator was one of those ideas that looked good but just didn't really work in the long haul. But as an actor, I really enjoyed the role of Westlake as a listener. I agree. Sunset was really just an incredible thing, full of incredible performances. Elise was marvelous. Joyce Bender as the manager was just absolutely amazing, where you have these two incredibly strong personalities, diamond cut diamond, people of incredible integrity and passion, and people who couldn't stand each other but in the end absolutely did respect each other. And I thought it was very good writing, and so really those are just some of the samples of some of my favorite moments.
Thanks, Mike. And Elise, hold on a moment. We have more callers. We have a caller from Boston. We're going to go to them in a moment. But I want to go to Elise and then James and, of course, Lindsay. And I have another caller from Nevada. I believe that's Las Vegas. They also want in. Bear with us, guys. We will get to you. I wanted to acknowledge you in the queue. Elise, you've been there from the beginning, too. Tell me. I imagine it's difficult for you as well to choose.
Yeah, because I would have to pick Cox or Cortez, and I have my favorite moments for both. But I think my favorite moment, my favorite episode would be Her Hardest Hue to Hold, because it is it's such an intimate moment. I mean, she's dying. And for me, that was the one that brought it together for me. It was very intense, but she let herself open enough to Alcar to recognize him. But then she still went out the way she wanted to.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
I almost want to say that was our first really good episode. Down the Rabbit Hole had been good, but it was kind of weirdly paced. Jim had a 22-minute scene at the end he had to produce in one go. We'd had a few other episodes that were getting some things right. And then Her Hardest Hue to Hold, 50 minutes on the nose, everything just played right, and Elise and Larry had a wonderful last scene. I love that episode too. I'm sorry, I'm stealing your moment.
Not a problem. In fact, my favorite line out of all of Excelsior's episodes is in The Hardest to Hold, and it's the one where Alcar leaves her room after he's told her what's happened, and she just looks at the door and she said, "If only I could trust you."
Oh, that's right. You know, listening to all of you guys, it's like, I remember that stuff. I remember all of it.
I just wish we made it faster.
Well,
good Lord, that was like 3 years ago.
Sometimes you have to wait for the really good stuff. Now, James, for you, I guess I have to preface this. It's a little unfair for me to ask you which is your favorite, because this is like...
all my babies.
Yeah, I was about to say that. As a parent, which child do you prefer, you know? It's difficult, but I'm sure you've had moments, though.
I have. There's for me, about a moment every episode that just sends the chills down my spine. There's the scene in Ozymandias, where the plot seems to be coming to an end. The plot of the episode is they have to chase down these two battlecruisers before they get back to Gevan on Prime, or the battlecruisers will alert the Gevanese, and then the whole Sword of Damocles will fall, and the galaxy will be destroyed. So all I have to do is catch these two ships and blow them up. And the plot has been resolved. We figured out, okay, there's the sabotage team on the Gevanon ship. General Brahms and Hermes have worked out their issues. Yubari and Brahms have had their little resolution arc. It's all good. We're catching up. We're about to blow them out of the sky. And then they make it. And there's this long pause. And Liebman's, and Alex Rall says, they sent out a signal. We didn't make it. And it settles in on the audience that, oh, geez, we failed. The Sword of Damocles is falling. How are we going to get out of this one? And then, of course, we spend the next three episodes trying to get out of that one.
Gave me goosebumps.
Yeah, that moment of, oh, no. And we've got this great piece of music in the background called Apocalypse from Battlestar Galactica that really makes that moment.
Yep, I remember that.
That's a fun one. And my most recent fun moment was in The Graceful End, right when they're about to... They're getting their whole plan together, and they're keeping the plan kind of under wraps.
Yeah.
And Alcar Nevan is on the battle bridge, and he's been sort of saying, talking around what he's doing on the battle bridge. It's like, what? Sovereign, the Excelsior has a battle bridge to
right. I was going to say, there was a line there that says, we actually have a battle bridge.
What? There's some argument on the plan, and then the music starts to build up, and Underwood made Dovan promise he'd give a speech, and Dovan was like, yeah, fine, I'll give the best speech I can, and he puts it on shipwide and says, okay, everyone, let's see if this speech is up to Underwood's standards. All hands, hit it. Music swells, huge explosion, cut away to the saucer section, and we're starting a saucer separation, and it is just a really sweet moment for me. And the post-producers did some marvelous work on that section. And in fact, the post-producers did marvelous work on all the sections that I'm really in love with.
Wow.
I could actually talk for the entire rest of the show about just my moments in season 3, to say nothing of Sunset, which is... I was once in a car with two people who were regular cast members but hadn't heard the show, weren't part of that episode, and I played it for them on the way out to New York State, and I looked back towards the end and they were both in tears. I was like, hey, this episode worked. Yeah. I'm good.
You bet darn right that episode worked.
Roger. Jim,
yes?
Here. I just remembered something that I really liked, and that was a moment. And it was James and I agonized over it in The Graceful End, and we ended up having to cut three sections out of it. Do you remember what that is, James?
That's the montage.
The montage scene at the end. Where the shuttlecraft is escaping and they're realizing that Simon's dead, and there's this really neat song playing underneath it that I had never heard before in my life, and now it's stuck in my head forever. And
yes,
we had to extend it and myrtleize it, and we tried a piano rendition of it, and we ended up just cutting out, 3 minutes, 4 minutes of the whole scene, because there were more scenes than we thought it would be necessary.
Yeah.
Jim,
but
did
it was
you
really
say myrtleize it? Did you actually say myrtleize it?
I said myrtleize it, yes.
Myrtleize, yes.
That was one of those moments that I heard that song over last summer and was thinking, boy, I love this song. And it really captures Rawl and Brahms, but I can never ever use it in Excelsior because it has words in it. It's Death Cab for Cutie's, what's it called?
I Will Follow You
in the
Dark.
Yeah, but I can't use it, obviously, because it has lyrics, and Star Trek doesn't do music with lyrics. That's just ridiculous. we can't just have a sad montage with, like, pop music in it. And then one day, while I was sitting here agonizing about why I couldn't do it, I thought, wait, it's Excelsior. I can do whatever the hell I want.
Yeah.
would it work? And it did. I did some test plays with the script I was writing, and it worked out well. And a year later, it finally came around to Jim, and Jim worked night and day to make that work. And we did have to cut some scenes, but they're mostly going to get salvaged. I actually, scene 58 with Cox and in the sick bay is going into episode 401. So
I was
going to
say we should do a little.
I wondered about that
addendum.
Scene.
That's getting saved. We had to cut it for time, but we're using it next episode.
Okay, well, here's something that I'm going to personally request is when you guys do come back in characters, and I'm really going to push James on this, is maybe you guys can actually perform a live scene that was actually cut out of one of the stories.
That could be fun, although we'd have to get
a whole group scene.
God. I never cut those. I love it too much when the whole cast is in the same
room.
Fair
enough. Well, then maybe you can just write one and we could do it as a special one-off, one-minute webisode.
As a vignette. We did a
snowball
vignette.
Fight.
Snowball fight.
Or like Canada and have a snowball fight.
Yeah, or given what happened to the Graceful End, hey, which of our friends are dead scene?
You know, that's about right. Dead.
Roll call.
Media. Yeah, that's right. Okay. There you go.
Cortez, dead, you know.
Now,
well,
Cox,
yeah, kind of alive, yeah.
Everyone on the bridge in the saucer section, dead. Crewman Harkless, dead.
Wow.
My father played Crewman Harkless, and he gave me no end of grief about that fact that I killed his character.
Oh, well.
He still is at, he's trying to start a letter-writing campaign for the fans to bring back Crewman Harkless. And I encourage
nobody
anyone
wants
who wants to participate in that.
Well,
I'm not getting involved with that. Sorry. You gotta work that one out yourself.
Captains have to know when to stay out of these things, and this is one thing I'm staying out of.
I think we better get to Lindsay before you run out of time.
Oh, good call. Lindsay.
Yes. Now, before we go to Lindsay, I want to remind everyone we are down to 12 minutes. So after Lindsay, I did lose a caller from Nevada, but I think I know who's on from Boston. Lindsay, I don't know about you, but as a fan, when each person gave their scene right now, I was like living it. I don't know about you. I felt it. Because I've seen, but you know what I mean. I've heard the episode. Lindsay, tell us.
Well, it's really hard to pick one because all of them are so interconnected, especially in season 3, which was, that one had me climbing the walls. But I have to say, it was after Golden Sittings that I started nagging my friends and family about watching it. I started, like, stealing my parents' iPods and putting Excelsior on it so that they didn't.
You're my new favorite fan.
Not to listen to it. Thank you. And I started nagging my friends who I always get them into fan stuff, and when I showed them this, they were pretty excited. And then I kept bugging them about it until they got into it, and now they're, like, nonstop, I swear. Toffee, the one who's an original series fan, I introduced it to her 2 weeks ago, and she is, like, 4 episodes from Graceful End already.
Oh,
and she's a busy
that's
person.
Right.
I just wanted to point out that Lindsay said, when I saw these episodes, which means we were doing a pretty good job, guys, of creating an atmosphere and a
you
scene
are.
And something into your mind.
You know, you talk
I
about
said the
this.
Same thing. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The funny thing is, talk about stuff like that where you say you saw the episode.
Yes.
It's a funny thing. We have a radio. We have a theatrical company here in Atlanta that does their version of old-time radio, sort of like what we're doing, but they keep saying there is imagination in sound. And it's like whenever I would hear them do the things, I just close my eyes and I would watch what they were doing.
That's exactly what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what it's all about, guys.
And I know people who really struggle to listen to audio drama because they can't keep their attention on something without visual. And I think that's they really lose something there. Even if they're not, you know, they lose my show, obviously, which is an awesome show and they should be listening to it.
That's
There's
right.
There's so much good stuff out there that's audio only. They'll never get to hear Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. They'll never hear Cabin Pressure. They'll never get to enjoy other things that have just all escaped my mind suddenly.
Well, Strange Stories of Misfits Audio, Jim Spagata and I have been deeply involved with that since
Laura
the beginning.
Laura Bond.
Yeah. Hey, I just, you know why I was late? Because I just re-recorded Lara Bond's main character, if you have a new actress for it.
Oh, all right. Who is it?
Christmas time. Her name is Claire Acott, and she's done a couple of things with Misfits with me, particularly My Man Godfrey. She played the lead role, lady. She's an excellent
That's
actress.
That's right.
One of my graduates.
Well,
sorry.
Don't say sorry. Jim, let me tell you right now, you're involved in another project. We'd love to have you guys on. Michael, you also mentioned something. Maybe we'll get you do the name drops in a moment, and you too, Jim. But I do want to get to our caller. I believe I know who it is. Caller from Boston. You're on. You're live. What's going on?
Hey, yeah, this is Jeff from Jeff. How are you, Roger?
What's going on, Jeff? How are you doing? The bane of my existence. What's up, Jeff?
No, Mr. Bane isn't here.
You'd be surprised. Go ahead, Jeff.
No, I am on Roger's coattails like crazy, and I'm driving him like crazy. I just wanted to give my go ahead, Roger. You know, go ahead and acknowledge the fact that I'm on your coattails and I'm driving you crazy. Go ahead.
No, not at all. As you know, Jeff is a host here on NDB Media, and he is a hardcore Star Trek fan, and he knows what he's talking about when it comes to Star Trek. So, I kind of knew it was him. That's why maybe I did him a little bit wrong by keeping him on hold for a little bit longer. But, Jeff, come on in, dude. We're down to about 8 minutes. You are a lifelong hardcore Star Trek fan, and both Jeff and I, if I can say it, we reach out to the programs such as yourselves because if we can, like I said earlier, if we can help get the word out, hey, we're beneficiaries too, guys. Whatever you guys do, we are beneficiaries to it. But Jeff, go ahead, man. We've got a little bit of time. Go ahead.
Roger, that was great. He said it exactly right. When we hear people that are cranking in Star Trek, you know, all we are just drawn to it like a moth to a flame, to a light, you know, and hopefully we won't get zapped like a lot of the moths get zapped when they go to the light. it is not cool. But you are a shining light, and I just wanted to give my thanks to you for pledging your allegiance to Star Trek the way you do. And thank you so much. And
Thank you.
By the way, all right.
You should, Jeff, you should have them on because Jeff is on at a holier hour than us. He's on during the day, earlier in the day on Saturdays. So you guys should showing up on Jeff Trek as well. But I do want to tell you guys that if at any time you guys want to join the program, with or without James, you guys are welcome. Anyone.
Gee, thanks.
Yeah. At any time. I don't know how much of a dictator James is, but since Jim and I actually get along real well, that must mean that we are both heavy-handed dictators.
Wait, what's James' last name?
Haney. Yeah, Haney.
You don't know me, do you?
No, he's the one. No, actually, he does know you, because when we were doing the Michael Jan Friedman episode, I said, if Jeff, you don't behave, I'm dumping you for James Haney. And then Jeff said, who's this guy James Haney that you're talking about? You'll see when he shows up. And then I get an email from James. Oh, dude, I can't make it.
I'm sorry.
So Jeff is like, yeah, who's James Haney? I'm like, it doesn't matter. You don't need to know.
Awkward.
Very awkward.
Yeah, but he's the son Gene Roddenberry doesn't talk about.
I don't want to call any too much attention to this, but I would Lindsay managed to get off without actually giving her moment. Is she still on?
I did her wrong. What a shock. Lindsay, go. Yes, she
what?
Is.
What?
Yeah, you didn't get your moment. Yeah, I'm sorry. We were asking you for your moment, and you didn't get your moment.
I guess
what was
I
your favorite?
Stole it.
Oh, no,
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
No,
I
took it
gave
away.
The episode, so.
Yeah, you did.
I
you,
just gave
you...
the episode, so. Okay. That's acceptable.
Sorry.
We'll
so
it.
I do have to say that when the whole thing with Simon and the graceful end, that had me like, that was like killing my soul. So congratulations on that.
Yes, that was
for
my
killing
goal.
Your soul?
Yes, it was like killing my soul. And when when my friends get to it, it's going to be killing their soul too, especially one of my other friends who loves Lorak and Simon because she's like, they're like big brother, little brother, and she loves them to tears, and it's going to just destroy her. So,
as
congratulations.
Jensen is going to destroy Lorak, she's going to get to go through that with a friend on the show because he is not going to be doing well after what happened to Simon for, I think, quite a while.
I'm not going to lie, I daydream about like what's going to happen next, and part of my daydream is that Lorak has like souped up the shuttle and renamed it the USS Westlake, and he has a death wish. Like, he's not suicidal, but he has a definite death wish, so that's always part of my daydream for this season.
Making some bad decisions?
So.
You thought he was mean before.
Being reckless.
Yeah,
like trying to kamikaze a Borg ship or something.
and you haven't been reading my script for the Graceful Beginning.
Uh-oh.
No,
you didn't steal it. All right,
what?
That's good.
Oh, well,
to be fair, I'm also an author, so it's easier for authors to predict what other authors are going to do. I think.
I see that. Yeah, definitely.
That
I just
got to
go
stuff.
Change some details quick.
Hey, you know what? It just happens. Ladies and gentlemen, we are down to 3 minutes. I do want to thank everyone, and you know, on behalf of Jeff and myself and the rest of your fans, to all of you on Starship Excelsior, let me tell you guys, we are fans. And it's our thrill to be able to get on your case to demand an episode from you guys because... You guys are doing good stuff.
Well, we do the good work.
You do.
With a phaser in hand and a cheerful smirk.
Cheerful smirk.
You know what? Yeah, that's
Should we sing? Can we sing again?
No.
No.
Darn
it. Not enough time.
Actually, there is one thing I would like to mention, if I can do a quick
shameless
plug. One of the other projects I'm working on is through Hidden Frontier Productions called Star Trek Grissom, which is based out of Dublin, Ireland. On Saturday, November 23rd, I will be sitting in a studio in Dublin, Ireland, recording my lines as Dr. Michael Lieben, PhD, for the next audio episode of Star Trek Grissom.
Awesome.
Get out of town.
Too cool.
Oh, you will be.
And okay. from there, I'm going to Belfast to go check out the local music scene.
Okay, Michael.
Travel while you're young, young man.
You travel, exactly. Enjoy it. And since you're going to be over there, you need to make the connection for us.
I'll talk to Sean Paul.
Yeah. Oh, I'm friends with Sean in Facebook, and I just haven't had the chance to speak to him. But NDB Media, I guess, has gotten a little full of itself now. We used to beg all the programs to show up on us, and they would. But now we've gotten, I guess, a little arrogant. Our theme is, hey, anytime you guys want on, just let us know.
Okay.
So, it's genuine. It's real. And you guys, again, I really want to thank you because you guys work hard at this. And I know it's a thrill when you count the number of downloads that the people have listened. And it's incredibly satisfying. It's incredibly satisfying for us as fans to know that we get our fix every few months, whether it be from Starship Excelsior or whether it be from someone else. But as a fan, as someone who has a radio program, I'm not being condescending when I say this, but I am proud of you guys. I'm proud of what you guys do, and I'm lucky to be a fan and listen to what you guys do. And I can
Thank
only ask
much.
One
Thank
thing.
You.
Please keep it up, guys. Because you're the ones that make us shiver when we're listening. You're the ones that make us laugh. You're the ones that make us wait with bated breath for the next moment. And that's awesome, guys. You've got us.
That's your imagination.
Well, where are you taking us?
Thank you, Roger.
And that's
I hear we only have 10 seconds left.
Thank
you,
Roger.
Thank you,
Roger.
Thank
you,
Roger.
You can hear us
good
again
night,
at starshipexcelsior.com.
Yeah.
And it's been great being here.
And as a matter of fact, now...
Thank you, Lindsay, for calling in.
Yes, we have gone over to overtime, so we can finish up properly.
End?
Yeah, it actually ended the live portion. Yeah, so we can actually take a few minutes to actually end it on our terms. And I think it's good.
Good. All right.
I actually forgot that you guys are on the same line as I am, so they could hear the countdown. Yeah, Jeff and Lindsay, they're like, what? what the hell are they doing? It's because they called in and they can't hear the countdown. So everyone else actually can. So it just means that we've gone into overtime. For the baseball terminology, guys, we're in the 10th inning now, so we can end it on our terms. James, why don't you give us the website again?
www.starshipexcelsior.com. Done.
Guys, any last words? Anything else you want to do? You want to tease us in any way?
I'll do this. Lindsay, ask any single question about season 4, and I will try to answer it for you.
Ooh.
That's a lot of pressure, because now Lindsay is responsible for all the fans. She gets asked the one
That's
question.
Mean.
It is, isn't it?
It's live radio, kiddo. It's live radio.
I'm a polite person, not nice. But polite.
Well, I have questions that I want to ask about.
Go for it. You're the one who called in. Nobody else did.
Oh.
Well, Jeff called in too.
I called in.
Yes.
Thanks, Jeff.
Defended your honor too.
Thanks, Jeff.
Well, I
go ahead,
just noticed. Sorry. I just noticed that Roll has a lot of regrets. Seems to have a lot of regrets after he thought that Lorak died, and I wanted to know if you were going to do anything with that, like if they were reunited, because a lot of shows kind of glossed over that, and I'm always like, what the heck? You thought that your best friend was dead, and now he's back, and all you're going to do is say, oh, hi, you're alive. So I was kind of wondering if you were going to do anything with that or not.
Yes.
So,
although I think it's going to be a difficult reunion. Because on the one hand, Rawl is going to have to come clean about the fact with Lorak that he committed those murders of his own free will, and he wasn't under genetic control at the time. And that's a pretty big thing to throw out in your friendship. And on the other side of that, Lorak has been through a terrible experience on Gevanon. He had to kill those bluegills. He broke their necks in cold blood. And so now he feels like he's a murderer, and a murderer who not only murdered but also lost Simon Westlake. And so his absolute conviction that we've seen in previous episodes is going to be really flagging. And I think it's actually going to fall to Rawl to help Lorak get his mojo and his conscience back in place. And that's going to take some time over the course of season 4. So I don't think there'll be one scene where they like get back together and give hugs, but we will be dealing with that. I think that's one of our major several plot like overarching character arcs in season 4. So yeah, good question.
Well, thank you very, very much for actually thinking this through, because so many shows just fall completely flat, and I'm always super disappointed. So, thank you.
Same here. You're welcome. Thank you for listening.
Lindsay, thank you. Jeff, obviously, speaking on your behalf, you want them to join Jeff Trek, don't you, on Saturday?
I sure do. What, this Saturday? We talked
no,
about
not
this
Saturday. Don't.
Hey. Not this Saturday.
Oh, you know what? No, that was a personal internal slam, because I did it. I overbooked. We have three episodes, and we can only accommodate two. Jeff does Jeff Trek. Jeff got screwed, because we have Mark Orremanner on our Lost for Lost. He did the Lost University, for those of you that are fans. And then we also have, I'm going to get shot for this, but James, I know you can help me out. We have a guest that we just announced for this Saturday. Mark's going to be doing the interview. And he played the Silver Surfer in the Fantastic Four, but he was the – is his name Hugh – oh, my goodness. I keep thinking of... Oh, Hugh Jones! You got... look it up.
Nope,
just look
no
it
idea.
Up.
I'm looking
oh,
up on IMDb.
Oh, you will know when you look it up on IMDb. Go ahead. It's Hugh Jones. He's on
Doug?
Everything. Or Doug?
I don't know.
I know.
Well, he's definitely going to be on. Don't let him hear this segment.
Yeah, he's not going to hear the segment. And then also on Monday, we have, I believe it's Vic Minona. I think you know him. He's on Monday.
actually.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, he's on Monday on this very same channel. So you,
I'm just listening to Full Metal Alchemist, and I just saw his episode of Star Trek Continues, and I like him. I like him a lot.
Good.
Yeah,
it's good.
As a matter of fact, Doug Jones is you got to look at it. It is Doug Jones on IMDb. He's in Pan's Labyrinth, Hellboy 2, The Golden. He was in Hellboy, Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer. And you should check out his IMDb. He's got like 9 movies coming.
The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle. I like that movie.
Yeah.
I'm not ashamed of liking that.
Here's something we hope you really like. Pull a rabbit on my head.
You see, guys, having this ensemble is absolutely awesome. But to be fair to everyone, you guys had to come back more often because you guys have been so cool. You give each other the moment to speak, but it's kind of like a regular episode, right? Where you don't have that much to say, and we'd love to have you guys back. So
it's really my fault that we
No. Cut it out, James.
That's your fault, James.
That's true.
We blame James routinely for everything, so it's quite all right. Yeah.
Okay, but I have to play up to James. You know, if you guys are going to come back, so I can't say that. So anyway, where are you guys in the world right now? As you all know, I'm in Southern California, just south of Los Angeles.
I did not know that.
You're still with us, Lindsay. You're on the west side of LA, right? What's the city?
Yep, I'm in Topanga, and
You did say that.
Right now,
I'm
in Topanga.
You're in Topanga.
And
Jeff.
Sometimes I'm in San Monica. So.
Oh, okay.
She can't be on Malibu Canyon Road then, can she?
I don't think so. No, I don't.
Is that where you live?
She said Santa Monica.
Yeah, former home of Lawrence Welk. You know, I mean, that's
a
very
one
important.
And a two.
And a one and a two, right. There you go.
That was good.
From the lovely Aragon the Ballroom.
They're making
old people jokes. I don't get them.
We need more time. Yeah, well, James.
Look up Sam Freeberg, Lawrence Welk. You'll get it. You'll find it.
Lawrence Welk.
Look it up.
Wow, yeah. Jeff, where in Boston are you at, dude?
Where am I at?
In Boston,
I'm just slightly to the left or to the right, depending on how you're looking at the globe. I am in Somerville. And I'm very excited about this episode that you're doing because anything Star Trek excites me. This is great. This is wonderful.
Good.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, go ahead. I'm sorry. No, Jeff, go ahead.
No. You had asked a question. I wanted to answer it before, but you had went on, so. So go ahead.
What a shock. What a shock. Yeah, you know, I definitely went on and I cut you off.
I want to answer the question.
Okay, but I want to know where everyone else is from. Jim, where are you from? Or where are you at?
Wait, where am I at?
Where you be?
I'm in Mississauga, Ontario, Canada.
Oh, so we do have...
It's next door to Toronto.
Toronto. Okay, good. Michael?
I'm in Atlanta proper.
Oh, so you did... I should have had the 305 area code right then.
Yeah, because I'm
404. Area code.
Yeah.
Is there an Atlanta improper?
Yeah. It's usually called OTP. Outside the perimeter.
Yes. Mike, where are you at? Where you?
I'm just outside of Tampa, Florida, in a little community called Lutz, LUTZ, and one of the great. T-shirts that we sell in our local stores here is a T-shirt that says "Where in the hell is Lutz, Florida?" So it's there was also a country music hit a few years ago called "Beautiful Downtown Lutz." So that's where I am, just north of Tampa, and who knows, I may be exploring other territories here in the not too distant future. But right now, I'm in Florida and hoping that my house doesn't collapse into a sinkhole or get blown away by a hurricane.
Oh, no kidding. Hey, Elise, tell me, you still down south?
I'm down here in New Orleans, baby.
New Orleans, that's right. All right.
Laissez hey. Bon temps rouler.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, well, there you go, James. You got to mix some of that in there in the next episode.
Apparently.
Yeah, you're going to have to do that. Jeff, any last thoughts, pal? Because I keep cutting you off. And then we're going to let everyone go because, you know, this has been the gauntlet for them.
No, it's awesome when people take Star Trek and make their own stories. I I have to bow down. I mean, when you talk about bowing down to a god, and you go, Allah, 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 whatever, I bow down. I bow down to a god. I bow down to people that do great stories, that tell these stories that tell about people that care about people, whether it be in present day or in the future. I love it. I love it. I love the future. I love,
well, we do
love
it for you,
Star Trek.
Yeah,
huh?
We do.
James writes good characters.
Yeah.
James is an excellent writer.
Look, there's no doubt about it.
My actors are excellent actors.
I was about to say, it's
definitely
a
group effort.
There definitely is. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of everyone here, I'm going to give it to James to end the episode for us. And I got to tell you, it's always a thrill to have you guys on, but I am pushing to have you guys show up more often. So I'm going to leave it with your fearless leader. And James, why don't you take us away? Let's end this episode, pal. And I want to thank everyone, Elise, Mike, Michael, of course, Jim, James, and of course, our two guests right now, Lindsay and Jeff. And did I forget anyone? Or James?
No, that's all of us, right?
Take us away, pal. That's it.
Well, I was just told that I have to get back on here, so I'm going to do what I always do when I have a tough job. Mike, handle this.
Oh, well done.
Good night, everybody. It's been a thrill. www.starship.excelsior.com is our website, and of course, NDB Media is Noriega Media Empire home base. Cheerio.
Thanks, folks.
Oh, no.
Thank you.